Welcome into the Seminole Wrap podcast, first of 2022 after a little holiday break. Hope you enjoyed your time off for the holidays and the start of a new year. Brian Pellerin here with your host. Juan Montalvo joining me as our loan analyst as John takes some time to do some professional regular job stuff. So he'll be back around soon, I'm sure. Juan, happy for him, working hard and whatever it is that he's working on.
Yeah, he's getting like a badass certificate in whatever it is he does professionally on a day-to-day basis. And I have no idea, despite talking to him on and off for 7-8 years on an almost daily basis.
That's a typical man relationship. I feel like I have that with all my friends. But, you know, normal stuff here. We'll talk FSU football. Obviously, it's off-season, but I don't know if there's going to be an off-season anymore, right? It seems like the transfer portal, there's no parameters on it, and the year just never actually stops.
Well, I mean, at least, you know, while there isn't like a bowl game for Florida State fans to talk about, there's not a bowl game for Florida State fans to complain about either. And the other nice part to that is, I mean, they've been spending that time on the road and with success now. You know, they've really done a lot in the transfer portal, keeping key kids. We'll get into that, but I mean, they've been very busy and otherwise, you know, quiet time of year for Florida State.
Yeah, you mentioned it.
Signing day behind them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we talked signing day a lot in our last episode, and you know, you mentioned the names in and out, and that we'll get to them, and there's a bunch. But it's kind of worked out where we were already going to tape this podcast today, which is Friday, January 7th, if you were curious. And just a few hours before we started, they landed maybe the biggest one they've gotten so far. I would imagine so, in Albany. Yep. Defensive end, Jared Verse, second-rated defensive player in the transfer portal. Landing him over teams like Tennessee and Miami, who were seen as the top contenders for him. And this is a position of need, defensive end. And they definitely got one that seems to be a guy who can fill the holes that you're going to have Jermaine Johnson and Keir Thomas leave on your team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that you're not going to just be able to replace Jermaine Johnson. He was arguably, you know, the best defensive lineman in the ACC. He's one of the best in the country last year. He's probably going to go top 50. You know, he's a little bit smaller than, you know, these modern tweener end types that they have in the NFL, but he's getting picked in the top 50. But a guy like Jared Verse brings to you a very similar style of play. He's 6'4". I think he's like 245, 250, and he's long. I mean, he may be 6'4", but I mean, you can see in the tape, like, he's got arms that just keep going. I mean, you know, talking about the player a little bit, and then we'll talk about the importance of it. He's a pretty big athletic dude. He's long, like I said, and this is, you know, one of the best things you can have in a defensive end is a dude who's like 6'4" with long arms, because it helps both in the run game and in the pass game, obviously. But I mean, when you have a guy on the edge who has the length to, you know, be engaged and also have an arm free, the outside arm free and run contain, that makes a big difference. So, you know, it's a good thing that they're getting a good body to replace him, to replace Jermaine out on that field side. I think he's capable of playing both the field and the Fox. He's more likely to play the field. Adam Fuller likes to play a bigger player like Akir Thomas at Fox, on that boundary side. And, you know, someone who's 6'4", 250 in the field side is perfect for a defensive end. So I think the player they're getting is good. You know, he's pretty dependent on his bull rush at this point. You know, I haven't I haven't gone deep into the film. But, you know, talking with our recruiting guys, Coach AB, Noel Through and Through, Joshua Pick, those guys, they have all a very high opinion of him. He's a high ceiling guy. He's got 3 seasons to play is probably the best part about it. So that's a big pickup. And going to the bigger picture part of it, defensive end was where you really had probably arguably your biggest need, because it was a sore spot for you in 2020 and some years before that. You know, even with guys like with Kane Doe, with Brian Burns, with Joshua Sweat, all those guys had a fair amount of injury over the years. And so, you know, Jermaine Johnson provided you a consistent, excellent presence on the edge, and having a guy like Jared Verse in there only improves the team. And you still need another defensive end. I mean, you're not replacing Keir Thomas overnight either. I've been gushing about Johnson, but Thomas is a is a good player. He's a guy who, for the right team, I could see going like third round, fourth round, maybe even a little bit better. But you know, you have two big names to replace. But while you do have some guys on the roster you need to get developed, you also need to bring in guys that are going to impact the team, fill the depth that they need. And I think they're doing that. They still need another defensive end, but they're also addressing other positions of need. You want to run through those real quick?
Yeah. Well, I was just going to give a quick mention. You know, I could see people saying like, "Oh, he's a guy from Albany." You know, it's going to be a big jump to an ACC level team. But I don't, you know, I don't want that to be a hindrance. We've seen guys come from other Power Five schools to this level and be total busts. So I would say don't write a guy off coming from a lower level. I mean, you know, it happens. Recruiting isn't exactly a exact science. Guys can fly under the radar pretty easily. And, you know, he's got a lot of stats. And you look at his list of offers. Like I said, you beat out Miami for this job. You beat for this kid. You beat out Tennessee. You know, he had offers from Florida, LSU, Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas, USC. I mean, this is not a guy that you just like went and grabbed from some random colonial school. I mean, this is a guy who can contribute, like Juan said, from day one, and not someone, you know, you really need to I don't want to say worry about, because any transfer cannot hit, but don't write him off as a smaller school guy when, you know, there are so many other names out there. But as Juan mentioned, I mean, you know, there are a lot of other names in this list that have been coming to school here, they're transferring in over the last few months, or at least committing to. Just to run through them, they did lose linebacker Jordan Eubanks to the transfer portal. He's on his way out. I don't know if he's picked another school yet, but he won't be at Florida State, it seems like. But they did bring in a linebacker in his place, UCF's Tatum Bethune. Hope I get the last name right there.
You did.
Receivers has been a big thing for them. We know that's been a huge area of need. They brought in three Illinois wide receiver, Deuce Spann, kind of a smaller, speedy guy. Used to be a high school quarterback in St. Pete area. ASU, it's Arizona State, Johnny Wilson, big guy, might be a tight end type. Maybe he's listed wide receiver, but we'll see. And then the biggest name in the group here too, as well, is Oregon wide receiver, Michael Pittman. The three of them obviously give you a lot of options. They brought in Louisville DB, Greedy Vance. I don't particularly know offensive line plays especially well to say this kid's great, but you know, Wisconsin has that track record for offensive linemen, and they brought in center Caden Lyles as a transfer. And then from Lamar, they got him. What's that?
As long as he can snap.
Yeah. Can he snap the ball? We'll take that. If you can hit Jordan Travis between the one and the three, that works. And then they get Lamar's offensive tackle, Bless Harris, who was originally committed to UCF as a transfer, and they managed to flip him back over. And obviously UCF is maybe a program that FSU should be ahead of, but they do have a respectable coach and a program that just beat Florida in a bowl game.
so people in the back.
Yeah, in case you missed it. But I mean, you know, you get a flip there, and that's a huge position of needed offensive tackles. So they've definitely put in a lot of work. It's not over, but you got to be happy with what they've put in already just in the last month.
Yeah, I think since we last recorded after signing day, you know, the signing day itself obviously was a disappointment, starting at around 11, well, starting at 7 o'clock, but really at 11:38 or so, I believe. Yeah. I forget exactly when the hat was tossed off the stage, but you know, obviously they missed heavy on signing day overall, although they had a good night with Armella. But you had a big group of positions of need, and they're positions that have been positions of need, you know, somewhat year in, year out over the last couple of years. Offensive tackle, linebacker, defensive end. And I think I'm going to throw this one out to Noel through and through from the triple option. I'm sorry, the three-star recruiting podcast on the Everything Noles Tomahawk Nation network. You know, he even threw in the idea of maybe a little bit of quarterback depth, as one of those spots. Like, you still have a few spots in this class that you can fill out. And, you know, we're talking about, at this point, what, six transfers in the last month? Yeah. You got Bethune, Spann, Vance, Wilson, Pittman.
Eight.
Miles. It's eight, yeah. I mean, and that's all – well, Harris was before that, and Lyles was right on the edge. But, I mean, you've had five or six just in the last month. So, I mean, they've been quite active in the portal. And frankly, you know, moving out a guy like Eubanks, yeah, you know, I mean, I don't think that kid is ever going to play at Florida State. He's a 3-star, and just I hadn't heard his name much since signing day a few years ago. So, I mean, I think they're doing a good job of addressing the needs. You've had the issue at center with Baby and Johnson gone. You don't have a guy who's got as much physical capability with Mo Smith, but it gives him competition. Like you said, I mean, it's hard to know what we have in Caden Lyles because he's not a guy who played, you know, 40 games or anything like that. But it's someone to give Mo Smith competition, and that's a darn good thing in my opinion. Offensive tackle obviously is a big position of need. That's another place I think that if I had my druthers, that'd be where I'd be telling Mike Norvell to focus. He doesn't need to be told that, obviously. I mean, they've gone out and got Bless Harris, out of Lamar, one of those schools that apparently exists. I wasn't aware of it.
I only know of them as a baseball school.
Yeah. They're in Mississippi or Louisiana, I think.
I think it's East Texas. I'll look it up. I think it's in Beaumont area.
It's in one of those godforsaken areas of I-10 that's about 100 miles from anything.
Yeah.
Which is about pretty much all of I-10.
It is Beaumont. That is correct. Okay. Beaumont.
Beaumont, Texas. Florida State's had other players from there. But anyway, I mean, I think they've done a very good job in the last month in terms of addressing those areas of need. There's still more to go. Obviously, you really want to get, for sure, another body at defensive or at offensive tackle, rather. I don't think it's as critical as getting a starter-level offensive tackle. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, if he's
out there, sure.
Yeah. If Laramie Tunsil smokes his way through that door, you bring him in. But I don't think there's one of those guys out there, at least at this point. But, hey, we've seen with the transfer portal these days, things change very quickly, obviously. And, the depth really, I think, at defensive end with Versus in there is pretty good. But you probably want one more body at least. And same goes for linebacker. I mean, you've got an improved group there, I think. And I think that they showed they could work around that linebacker core. But it's also a good thing that they're keeping guys they want to keep. Jamie Robinson, I'm gonna steal the host role for a second and do the transition here.
No, go for it.
So, the other things that happened weren't just, the transfers in and out. Obviously keeping your upperclassmen is a critical thing if you want to succeed in college football, and especially when it's one of your starters. Jamie Robinson may not have had, his best career season or whatever, but it's definitely a good thing to have that dude back. That experience in the secondary, he's going to be, I think, a fifth year guy at this point, after his time before at USC, I think it was. But anyway, you've got an experienced fourth or fifth year guy there in the backfield who's been with Fuller a couple of years now. So that's good. I mean, they're keeping guys who, frankly, I mean, I don't think Jamie Robinson was going to be a top 100 pick or anything, but, it's still good to have a guy like that rather than losing him to the transfer portal or the NFL for sure.
Yeah, and I think when you look at this roster and all the moves that they've made, I know we've talked about it quite a bit. I mean, where this roster is in terms of, the blue chip percentage and all those types of things, you just need to get in bodies, whether they are top-end bodies or not, startable or right on that fringe level players is what this program desperately needs. And bringing them all in, great. I mean, there's been a lot of talk of this is the start of NCAA free agency and, the problems that may cause or positives, depending on how you look at it. But I think it does give you a chance if you're in, Florida State and Mike Norvell's position to overhaul a roster quicker than you probably ever could have. Now, I don't want to set the expectation that that's what this is doing, because quite frankly, you never know what any of these kids really are until you get them in campus and get to see them. I mean, obviously these other schools they're transferring from, is it a situation where they just didn't feel comfortable there anymore? A coaching change pushed them out. Maybe the school said, you're just not going to play here anymore. I'd suggest you find somewhere else to go. I don't know. I mean, obviously this coaching staff should, but as us sitting here, I'm not really certain.
I mean, it depends player to player.
Yeah,
it
depends player to player.
You can have a Jermaine Johnson situation where it's a very good player who's in a crowded room and who's trying to get more snaps to stand out for the NFL. and you win that lottery. That's you know, really one of the those are the types that you really want all the time.
Right.
But the other type I would say is the Caden Lyles type, who is, you know, not necessarily actually a very similar situation. He's in a crowded room, the Wisconsin offensive line room.
Yeah.
I mean, about 50 people in it, and they each weigh about 400 pounds and they're full of cheese. but the Lyles kid, I mean, he's one that he's around a lot of competition, season opening. I mean, and that's really what you need. You need people who are eager to play, and who aren't going to disrupt your culture. And I think in a lot of cases, Mike Norvell's done a very good job of that so far, yeah. His two and a half off seasons, I guess, of sort of finding guys who will come in and not necessarily even be good contributors, because it's hard to guarantee that in the transfer portal, but that they won't be a negative contributor to the locker room. Like, I can't think of one off the top of my head who was. I mean, you've had several busts in the transfers. I mean, granted, you signed 20 guys over 3 years who are transfers. You're going to have that happen. But I can't think of one who is a truly negative influence. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think they've got, they're bringing in good kids, you know, which is helps you build the roster, because what you really don't need is sort of what Miami did a little bit under Manny Diaz, where he got very aggressive in the transfer portal and brought in some talent, but it brought in some malcontents and, you know, made the team a little bit more malcontent. Obviously there were a lot deeper issues there that are why Manny Diaz is no longer employed by the University of Miami, but it's definitely a balance that you have to look at when you're dealing with the transfer portal. Like, are you getting a kid who is a misfit and he's just talented enough that you want to go for him, you know, like the Greg Reeds of the world?
Right.
No disrespect to Greg Reed. Obviously he was just, you know, I wouldn't say troubled player, but a troublemaking player at times, let's put it that way. And you've got to be careful that you don't bring in too many of those, or, you know, you can have some locker room discontent like they saw at Miami. And, you know, until proven otherwise, Mark Norvell's not doing that. He's doing a nice job with it and addressing key positions needs. So, I mean, there's not much to complain on about at this point.
No, for sure. And I think they're making some good moves. I think if I remember correctly, I know it happened over the holidays, so I might've been a few drinks in when I saw it, but I think Pittman and the Arizona State wide receiver were high school teammates, where you were able to kind of bring in one, which then brought in the other. I know obviously LSU had Max Johnson as their quarterback. When he transferred out to Texas A&M, Texas A&M also got his brother, who was like the number one overall tight end in the class. So I think as you're seeing that too, is something also to consider. Maybe the kid who transfers in isn't the greatest, but his high school buddy, maybe next year or whatever down the road, could be part of it as these moves go. It's just one of those changing landscapes of college football that's certainly going to make things interesting. Obviously, like we talked about, this isn't finished. Neither is the recruiting year. We still have another signing day to go there. But I mean, by all measures so far, they're doing a great job. They're keeping the roster together as well as you probably could have. And, you know, they're bringing in the talent to plug the holes that they pretty desperately needed to fill.
Yeah. I mean, and, speaking to what you're saying there, the Bless Harris kid, he's from St. Augustine High School in Louisiana. Yeah. Coach Yak has obviously been recruiting Louisiana pretty heavily. It's going to be tough, you know, with the dancing Cajun Brian Kelly there, but to get the best guys. But there's a lot of good 2- and 3-star type players who don't get recruited by LSU and or Alabama. You know, the two real teams in Louisiana recruiting these days.
Exactly.
Well, although, you know, A&M is making more of a push anyway. But he's at St. Augustine High School in New Orleans, or he's from there, and that's as good a football program as you'll see in Louisiana. So, I mean,
yeah,
you've got to take advantage of those sort of relationship building opportunities where you can as well. And I think that's not, you know, a primary component in getting a guy like Bless Harris. You got Bless Harris because you need an offensive tackle, and Bless Harris is an offensive tackle. It doesn't hurt that he's from St. Augustine in Louisiana.
Right. You know, and that's one of those things that I just wanted to mention as something that doesn't often come up in the portal conversations, where it's like, it could also open a lot of doors to things. Of course, you're going to see a lot of movement and God knows what. But, you know, as we mentioned, they held the roster together. I don't want to do too much window shopping around. But I did see, I know Oregon of the South, I guess what we call them. Miami has added another coach, which is, you know,
Did you actually just like mistake?
That was a Freudian slip. Sure was.
Yeah, no, I mean, you might as well just call it, you know, Mario Cristobal's Eugene Gables or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it is.
Yeah. It was supposed to be the coaching staff to end all coaching staffs. And it's basically just
Joe Brady and Mike Ditka. I mean, all these guys are supposed to come out of retirement and fix it. John Gruden, I guess, is canceled, so he can't do it for this time. But I mean, you had some very good names that were in the you know, quote unquote rat race for Miami, and it hasn't worked out. It's basically just been the random dudes that were on Mario's staff, and there's one or two good ones on there. But I was literally looking earlier this evening at their coaching staff and who they have on there right now, and I was like, oh. Joe Brady didn't go. I forgot about that. Like, yeah. Joe Brady decided to remain unemployed rather than go and coach in Miami. So, but everybody else, it's like, who are these dudes? And I mean, I know that you can say much of the same about, you know, some of Florida State's coaches in their past relative to, let's say, the Alabamas of the world. But I mean, Miami came out their guns blazing with an $8 million contract or whatever it is for Mario Cristobal.
Yeah.
With all this word, they were going to spend all this crazy money. They're going to invest in the program. You know, I was one of the few Florida State fans who, you know, believed it to a point that thought that it would actually become an impediment. I don't know what they're doing. Like they clearly have the money and they're clearly willing to spend it. I don't know if it's that unattractive to coaches or other schools are just paying gobs more than Miami wants to or thought they could afford. I don't think it's a budgeting issue. I don't know what's going on down there, but it's funny to me.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, just comparatively, I mean, we've had a couple of recruits in the last few weeks pick Mike Norvell and Florida State over Miami. You know, I think those are obviously wins that are great when you see it's easy, but when a new coach comes in and he's got this new car smell about him, you know, I'm new, I'm here, I'm going to fix the U, and he was already, you know, they were already in the list. It's good to beat those schools out to show you have that momentum as well, even though your coach isn't as new, you know, it's a good momentum builder.
That really speaks to how important stability is in college football.
Correct.
I mean, you may not ever win a national championship with Mike Norvell. You know, I don't know if he'll ever get that chance. I don't think, you know, it's very difficult for anybody to do that right now.
Right.
Jimbo Fisher is now at the point where he's starting to recruit at the level of Georgia and Alabama. It's going to be 5 years before he can, you know, really, really compete and kill if he's doing that. But yeah, like you said, it's always good to beat those guys on the recruiting trail. I mean, they don't have an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator, and that really speaks to how important stability is in college football. Mike Norvell's staff, no one's gonna you know, go out there and say Kenny Dillingham and Adam Fuller were major splash hires, like say when Jimbo Fisher hired Mike Elko as his defensive coordinator his first year at A&M. You know, Jeremy Pruitt went to Georgia with Kirby Smart. Like, big marquee hires like that don't necessarily mean, you know, you're if you don't have those, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be bad. And stability, having the same program, the same scheme, the same continuity, it's huge. I mean, look at what it did for Wake Forest. I mean, they obviously have a somewhat innovative scheme, but their basic principles and formula have been the same for 8 years under Clawson or whatever it's been. And it's interesting because it's very similar to how Jim Grobe ran that program. I mean, they would sort of have waves every handful of years as they built the roster together to a certain point. They couldn't sustain it, or they couldn't sustain the numbers because they just aren't a high level school. But you know, when you get the right combination of quarterbacks, experienced players along both sides of the line, and just a cohesive team, you can play above your level. And I think, and recruit above your level for that matter. And obviously Florida State's not Wake Forest. You're not looking for a team to go become 60-year seniors and all that sort of stuff. But It's important for recruiting, for the program to have continuity, even if Mike Norvell is never going to get you to the, you know, to the true, you know, the real finish line you want to get to.
Yeah, it's all about moving in just that general direction. And obviously to continue that momentum, it's obviously very important. I mean, you can look around and see just how quick things collapsed at UF to be, you know, continuing momentum. Even if you skyrocket, it doesn't really help if you can't continue it and sustain it. That's the hardest part in all of it. I know overall wise in Florida State world, I think that's really pretty much what's going on. I mean, this is, I guess, obviously episode off season number one. So I don't want to drag them out too much. We are working on trying to get some interviews with you guys, coaches, maybe the AD, just working on some fun, different ideas for the off season to fill the time along with the transfer portal. They'll obviously continue a bunch. We thought maybe a basketball thing, but you know, is the basketball season already over? I just putting it out there. Is it? I mean,
for me, the basketball season ended
the day it started. Well, you arrive, like, you know, football ends, right? And the natural is, okay, now it's basketball's turn. But if you turn and look, I mean, they're 7-5 overall. I looked online at some bracketology stuff earlier to see, you know, what if it was something to talk about. They're at like a 30% chance to make the tournament. They got to get to 20 wins, but they've already had a bunch of games canceled. It just seems like already a tough climb, even in early January. So I won't take you into the ins and outs of tomorrow's conference game. I think it's Louisville. And, you know, baseball 6 weeks away. So, you know, at the, you know, importance of your time versus the same as ours, I don't want to bore you with that. You know, I mean,
The only thing I'll say about the basketball team is they're probably a little bit better than they look record-wise.
Right. I mean,
KenPom has them as top 50. They're not a bad team, but this is definitely not one of Leonard Hamilton's strongest teams, of course.
And you dig yourself an early hole. It's tough to come out with. So instead of going basketball and you know, making the two of us try and figure out a way to entertain you with that, Juan, do you have thoughts on the college football national championship game on Monday? We got Alabama Georgia rematch. I'll give you a second to think here because I did do the bowl pick'em with the group from Tomahawk Nation. If you're in that, very exciting. Thanks for joining. I think we had like 60 or maybe it was like 45 people join. I'm third, can't win. I'm going to end up at best second. I took Georgia. So if you want a little preview on that, I took Georgia in that one. I did pick against LSU for anyone who was curious. It was pretty obvious that 30 scholarship players and a wide receiver at quarterback wasn't going to be what won us a game. But I took Georgia in this one. I'm going with the principle of Alabama's best matchup the first go around was John Mechie, the super talented wide receiver. He's obviously out with the torn ACL at this point. So I think it took a pretty special Bryce Young performance to beat Georgia the first time. I know Georgia couldn't move the ball at all, but I'm going to just chalk that up as an outlier and lay the 2.5 and go with the dogs. What do you think?
I'm not sure what to think. I mean, I think it's an interesting style matchup. I mean, you know, defensively Georgia is as good as anybody, but the last team to light them up was Alabama. So
right. Put it on them.
Yeah, I mean, and they lit them up. It wasn't even, you know, they were better than the normal 4 yards play. It was like, all right, we're going to take them to the woodshed just about. But I don't know. I'm not that big a fan of this Georgia team. I mean, they're so stad offensively. It's just, it's like, it's not like bad or anything. I mean, they're not completely 1940s, rush the ball, but they're just I don't think they're taking advantage of the talent they have on offense, and I think that's probably at the end of the day what will for me tilt my thoughts at Alabama's favor. I know that they don't have the offensive line that they did 3-4 years ago, but I mean Bryce Young has on his better days been, you know, the Heisman winner. I mean,
yeah,
and if he shows up and plays a B minus or better game, I don't see how Georgia's able to score the ball enough. I mean, or you know, move the ball enough to keep up. I mean, I don't have a lot of confidence in Stetson Bartholomew Beauregard IV, but I mean, he's obviously a decent player, or he wouldn't have unseated JT Daniels. Yeah. So I don't know. I think Alabama's a better team overall. Just better coached, and I know that Georgia is a well-coached team, but you know, one of them is Alabama, and until proven otherwise, Saban in the national championship game scenario is hard to bet against.
Yeah, it's an I'll see it when I believe, I'll believe it when I see it type situation. Yeah, I don't know. I part of the issue with Georgia too is the skill player they use the most is an 18-year-old tight end. You know, yeah. It's tough to rely on an 18-year-old tight end to be the difference maker in your games against Alabama.
Well, here's the problem. That kid, Brock Bryce, I think he's that.
Bowser.
Bowser, yeah. Or not Bowser. Is it Bowser? Or Bowers. Bryce
Bowers.
Yeah.
Bowers. I made him a Mario supervillain.
Yeah, fucking Mario over here. But Bowser is a fantastic player. I mean, one of the better tight ends we've had in college football in a long time. He's fun to watch, honestly. But he's one guy. And the problem is a tight end, a guy like that, who's like your 6'3", 235, 240-pound guy that moves really well, he's great against 80% of teams because they don't have a guy who is a corner who's big enough, or, you know, a safety who's big enough to really, you know, be the match up physically, or they don't have a guy, or they don't have a linebacker who can cover him. Alabama has both of those. I mean, they have defensive backs who are going to be 6'1", 200 pounds. They've got linebackers who are 6'4", 225, 230 and can cover. Where he presents the matchup problems for most teams, Alabama's much better suited to neutralize it. So I don't think that – I'm sure that he'll have, you know, his moments. He's an excellent player, but he is not going to be able to run the game by himself like he did, you know, the last few times we watched him on TV.
Yeah, I was surprised by how well they performed against Michigan. I was an idiot and had Michigan plus like 7.5. So
now I would have really liked to see Alabama versus Michigan. I think that would have been a much more fun matchup to watch. But I'm not one of these people who is anti rematch. You know, in especially in the playoff era, I think it doesn't bother me that we're seeing two really good teams play again, and two teams that I like watching Georgia's defense. I'm not going to say I like watching their offense.
No,
I don't think even Georgia fans would. But the, you know, Alabama, they're a fun to watch team now. I mean, obviously 7-8 years ago, they were what Saban did for 15-20 years successfully, but now they're spreading the ball out. They're playing quick. They're, you know, playing four receiver sets and they've got 5-star receivers everywhere. I mean, them against Michigan would have been a much more interesting matchup when you got someone like Aiden Hutchinson. I think Michigan's offense is a lot more dynamic, obviously, than Georgia's. And I think that, you know, while they obviously didn't do well against Georgia, I think they could have presented some matchup problems to Alabama. Yeah. But who knows? Obviously, it's something we'll never get to see.
We'll never find out. Yeah. Yeah. I was surprised, and I don't want to drag it on, but the conversation about the playoff, the semifinals being blowouts, being an argument against expansion, I felt like it was four. I'm always in favor of more meaningful college football games. I don't know why eight is such a divisive thing. I feel like it allows the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl and the Peach Bowl and the Orange Bowl to all be part of the process, and then you can still have your let's play a championship in Vegas for no reason whatsoever type game. But, you know, I think if that's the way we're going with college football, I don't see why it's such a bad thing. But again, I don't want to drag it out, so I won't get on that soapbox.
Well, I'm going to drag it out a bit because I really would just as soon go back to two. I mean, to me, there's no reason why it shouldn't have been jockeying for, you know, between Alabama and Michigan as to who was going to be, or I'm sorry, as Georgia and Michigan as to who gets the number two. This year, it obviously would have been Michigan. I mean, you can't give a team who just lost the conference championship to their opponent
again. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, they spaced it out a couple of weeks in recent year or previous years, notably the 2011, I think it was, LSU Alabama.
Yeah. Thing. 11 season, January 9th, 2012. It's a wound in my chest.
Game of the century one was 9-6. The
second 9-6. Second was 21-0.
That's right, 21-0.
Yeah, I think it was like 3 field goal. Like we held them in check for nothing for a long while, and then Trent Richardson busted a long touchdown run, and the floodgates just were wide open at that point.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, the thing for me, like that 9-6 game, that was a defensive masterpiece. Like, okay.
Beautiful.
Yeah, sure. Justin Jefferson may be the worst quarterback in the history of college football. Or not Justin.
That's his name. Yeah. Jordan Jefferson. Justin Jefferson's the receiver for the Vikings.
That's right. I always confuse the two.
It's his brother. So
yeah, it's easy enough. But yeah. But one's good. One's really good, and one's not. the pitch that Jordan Jefferson made during that 9-6 game, or was it
21-0 when he flipped? You're talking about when he flipped it right to the linebacker.
Yes.
It's 21-0. Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of the funnier moments in a college football national championship. I'm sure you are.
Well, I was a child. I was, 16. Or no, I was, let's see. Quick math. Yeah, it was like 16. Yeah.
Shoot, man, I was out of college at that point.
Yeah, I was 16.
We probably got listeners who are going to be like, I've got my second grandkid at that point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many over 60s we have in our demographic, but hopefully we get more. You are a good consumer for the AARP parts of our advertising sponsorship packages. This podcast is brought to you ad free, and we've only got 2 minutes left here, so I'm gonna do. We normally play a little game at the end of this thing, and typically I just like to make something up on the fly, and so I'm gonna ask you to. Well, it's hard to rank them all, so. You're going to have to give me your top three Fast and Furious movies.
I haven't seen any of them.
Got less than a minute. You haven't seen any of them?
Not a single one. You'd be surprised. How about this? We got 90 seconds. Roll through as many movies as you can. I'll tell you yes or no if I've seen them. I bet you it's more no's than yes.
All right. Fast and Furious.
No.
Tokyo Drift.
No. None of them. I've seen none of the Fast and Furious. You can just cut that whole series.
Oh.
Die Hard. I mean, like, all of them. No.
Die Hard 2.
No.
Die Hard 3.
None of them.
What the hell, man?
I've seen like no movies. I've been more of a video game guy growing up. I just never saw movies.
That's a wrap. Get rid of this guy. That's a wrap.
Hit the music.